All right, everybody.
Welcome, everybody, to the show Life's a Banquet, the show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible.
Starring your hosts, me, Brenton Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about ostriches, wine, and dough.
I'm drunk.
Always. Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, banquet.
Welcome to Life's Banquet,
the podcast.
We start over.
Welcome to Life's a Banquet,
the podcast that's
edible and
Brenton.
Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a podcast about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and pourable.
Starring your host,
Brenton,
Scott,
Zara,
Tang.
Gora.
Welcome. This is episode 14, everybody.
Hey.
Coming from the heart of Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, Carroll Gardens.
And W. Carroll Gardens Studio.
www.carroll Gardens Studio.
Mm-hmm.
We're at Studio 20 today, you guys.
Listen, today... Oh, wait.
Today's the first day of the rest of the week.
You know, I knew it was something really big. Yeah. I could tell the energy was different.
Exactly.
It is hot August summer here.
I'm on speed,
and by speed, I mean a grapefruit LaCroix.
Cheers.
Cheers. Sparkling water's all the rage. I am already noticing a decline of my interest in flavored seltzers.
I know.
And back to regular seltzer.
Yeah.
I had a conversation.
Tell us.
We started talking. She said, oh, I love water. And she said, Dasani.
I love water. What the hell were
I
you
like
guys?
I like water. I love sparkling water.
Who doesn't?
A lot of people don't. And so this episode is not about sparkling water, but it is about a lot of things. Anyway, but the water, she said, what's your favorite kind of water? And I said, well, I vacillate between...
good vocabulary.
I love vacillating.
I always vacillate.
I told you, I always vacillate in the morning.
I vacillate before I macerate.
Oh, that's right.
So it's smooth.
Yeah, you know what? It's important to make sure.
You got to keep it slippery and smooth.
The Perrier and Pellegrino.
Okay.
So and I declared to her, I said, imperatively speaking, Pellegrino is for after yoga or a workout, and Perrier is for right before bedtime or in the middle of the night. And then a bottled club bottle of club soda.
Yeah.
Like those tiny little glass bottles
are
for extreme morning hangovers.
Yes. This is all very high society.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have sparkling water at this point in my life. The end days are near, so I'm just trying to keep everything as luxurious as possible while it lasts.
Yes,
so we have to just drink out of the, gutters.
The end days. And you know what?
End days.
When life, deals you a certain set of cards, you just drink sparkling water to deal with it.
Exactly. When life gives you lemons, squeeze them into LaCroix.
LaCroix
or LaCroix?
I read on their website that you can pronounce it either way.
Really? I'm pronouncing it LaCroix.
Yeah, you can do that too. You can do whatever you want. It's English and there's no rules.
Yeah, that's right. We have a podcast now, so we can say whatever we want. Listen, world, it's LaCroix.
Mm-hmm.
LaCroix. Brenton, what's going on with your week?
Well, I vacillated this morning after I vacillated the first time.
Do you ever consider that you might be desensitizing yourself by vacillating too much?
No, I mean, I think the vacillation that I had post-vacillation.
Okay.
So this is actually a quadruple vacillation. I was actually vacillating between what kind of plum cake I was going to make today.
Okay.
So there's a
You spoke about this last week. So you've been thinking about it for 7 days.
As you know, my recipes tend to evolve over the course of a couple weeks.
Where are we at now?
In which case, it's too late because the fruit that I originally bought for the
it's
recipe
molded.
Is now molded or I've eaten it and turned it into a jam. So everybody knows, that plum. Didn't we talk about plums last week?
Of course.
Damn it.
This is a plum podcast at this point. This is just a 100%. Welcome to Life's a Plum.
Wait a second.
I'm Brenton and Zara.
So I'm repeating
plum
myself.
Cast.
Okay.
That's okay.
Moving forward, I made a really fabulous Spanish tortilla last night.
Okay.
Beyond.
So I saw a picture of it. Was it purple potato?
Yeah. So they're called the purple mollies or blue mollies or something.
Yep.
They are, I'm all relaxed here.
Yeah.
Sitting back.
Yeah.
LaCroix. So purple molly potatoes. Now, I'm from Wisconsin, and I lived in Spain. Those are two things that everybody should know about me.
The quotable breakfast.
But I learned how to make a Spanish tortilla from a real Spanish grandmother. I might have talked about this before, but there are several ways, and a lot of people have... They're very, very popular, right? I mean, they're on menus everywhere
now.
Can
you tell us what Spanish tortilla is? You know, obviously I know. Yeah, she knows. For the laymen or laywomen at home.
Yeah, or just if those of you that haven't learned or just know... You know, there's tortilla, which is a corn masa, harina, corn, you know, tortilla.
Yeah.
Don't explain that. And then tortilla, a Spanish tortilla is an egg and potato omelet, which... You know, it has many forms, but generally it's sliced and fried potatoes. They're sliced and then you stir the, you know, whisk some eggs and then you put it back in the pan and you make like a frittata. It looks like a, it's the Spanish frittata.
With a lot of potato in it though.
With a lot of potato. And don't say frittata because Spanish are like, screw you Italians.
Yeah.
And so I learned to make mine by taking some potatoes and they peeled them. And I'll never forget when I was in Spain in high school, the grandmother would use a really dull paring knife to peel her potatoes.
Okay.
And I kept telling her, I said, oh, you know, in Spanish, I said, there's this thing in America we have. This is 1992. So imagine our, how ancient it was.
I'm picturing you in 1992. Your hair is like just like, you have long. Like a long
I had like
mullet.
An extra large t-shirt on.
Yeah. You're wearing like a flock of seagull or like a no fear t-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. Like with like JNCOs. JNCOs and Tevas.
Sorry, now I have a mental picture, as is everyone else. Yeah. So then,
so the fashion that's right now.
You told her there's a peeler.
And a peeler, and she said, that for what? I said, it's really fast. You take a peeler, and it just peels the very edge of the potato skin. And they said, oh, we don't have those here.
Yeah.
Which I don't think...
I'm sure they...
I'm sure she just liked to do it. Anyway, she would cut them into irregular shapes, and then fry them in 100% olive oil, because they had an abundance of olive oil.
Sure.
And then you would let it sit, of course, and then add eggs, and let it sit for 10 minutes, and then put it back in the pan. So last night I woke up from a 2-hour nap and I was exhausted and I just, I'm like, oh my God, I have to make a tortilla.
Only you, dude.
I was so stressed out. I was like,
have that reaction.
I had the wackiest dreams. I'm like, the only thing that's going to get me out of this. And I put some zucchini in it. And so in Spain or Spanish, they say, oh, que le sale bien means, you know, or it turned out well.
Okay.
And every tortilla has its own character. You know, sometimes they come out well. Sometimes the potatoes are more moist or, or, you know, anyway, these blue ones, I was nervous because they can get a little dry.
Yeah.
But this one was not in the, anyway, I cooked the potatoes in a wok.
Ooh.
A wok.
How unusual. Breton does everything with a little twist.
A little twist. Got my own little twist. Preston got me a wok and I'm like, well, I might as well use this.
Yeah. Wok not.
You know what? Walking is...
I love a wok. We used to have a Chinese restaurant in my hometown in Northport called Wok on the Dock because it was a harbor town.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Well,
anyway, I don't have a wok. Can you tell us what it's like? What is it like having a wok?
It's like having a pan, except it's shaped a little differently.
Wow.
But I think the heat is it's distributed better, and it to me, it just fries better. I can't explain it. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. And, you know, the outcome was this gorgeous. I was afraid that it was going to look mucky. I was afraid that it was going to come out looking like a purplish, brownish mess.
Yeah.
When in fact, after I let it set, after I took it out of the pan for about an hour, I let it just chill out. And then each individual blue, and then it was mixed with little bits of golden zucchini.
Oh, that gold zucchini.
Oh, it
here.
Was pretty.
It's amazing.
Anyway, you should talk about your enchiladas.
Goodness gracious. I did a lot of cooking this week. I made, as you guys know, I only cook when guests come over. And so I invited over Breton and his boyfriend, Preston, and we had a delicious enchilada meal. I had gone to the farmer's market Saturday and Sunday and collected all the bounties of summer, which includes a lot of
things.
Peppers, a lot of herbs. So I ended up, you know, I had poblanos, I had zucchini flowers.
Perilla leaves.
Perilla leaves, which I thought was red shiso.
And it turns...
Jokes on me.
Perilla leaf is a sesame leaf, which I don't think it's actually...
It's fine. You know what I was reading? You pickle them.
Oh, yeah.
That's a thing.
I Google it.
Yeah. But anyway, so I had all this stuff that was like, I'm like, oh, I had tomatillos. That's how it started. I bought all these tomatillos.
It always starts with tomatillos.
I was like...
The weeds
that
they are.
I was thinking of you at the farmer's market, because if you guys don't know, for listeners out there who are just joining us, this podcast kind of started when Breton encountered a person at the farmer's market who was confused about what a tomatillo was.
And they thought it was an eggplant or something.
Yes, exactly.
I think.
Or they thought an eggplant was a tomatillo.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we don't remember how the podcast started, but someone was confused as fuck at the farmer's market. So the other day I was there and I was getting these tomatillos, and this person was with their girlfriend. It was like an awkward new couple shopping for vegetables.
Like, oh, are we going to like this?
They're like, do you like green tomatoes? Should we get some? And I was just you idiots. Oh. I turned around and I go, you idiots.
That's... And then he punched you in the face, and you got up, and then you called me, and I came over.
And I go, you idiots. You're dumb.
That's when you give them a sticker. Said, hey.
Hey, Life's a Banquet.
Looks like you could use some of our advice on Life's Banquet, the podcast that talks all about the difference between eggplants and tomatillos.
I was like, you guys don't know anything. And I just snickered, and I walked away. I let them figure it out. They're gonna be the ones who are sorry. But anyway, I bought the tomatillos, and I made a lovely... salsa verde, like a tomatillo salsa.
Classic and delicious.
I put celery leaves in it, and I put some mint.
Zara tried to stump me. She said, what's the mystery ingredient? And I tasted it, and I tasted it. And then I said, what did I say?
You said lovage.
Oh, I said, is there lovage in here? And you said, nope. And then she said celery leaf. And for those of you, if you're not sure, lovage is related to the celery plant. And
he was very close.
Yeah, it tastes very floral, like a... celery leaf. Yeah. And in fact, it might be.
So I made that, and then I had a really lovely half chicken, or a whole chicken actually, that I had spatchcocked at an earlier occasion. I had an extra one, so it was brined. It was very delicious. I defrosted it. I roasted it. That was the filling with some poblanos and some mozzarella cheese, believe it or not.
I believed it. And mozzarella.
And zucchini flowers. Anyway, I baked it and then made some really simple, lovely rice, some jasmine rice.
The jasmine rice is very tasty.
Thank you. And a corn guacamole dip that had mayonnaise in it. It was kind of an elote.
Wait a second.
I know.
That was what it was.
Mayo.
I thought it was unusually creamy.
Yeah, I put mayo in it. It was good. That shit was good. And I put, what else is that thing? What's that tangy spice that they use in Mediterranean cooking? Sumac.
Sumac. You finished
sumac in it too. It's good.
Sumac trending. You know, it's so funny. I was thinking about that, and my mom would probably say, oh my gosh, how'd you know how to do this? And you just said, I don't know. I just put some stuff together. It seems obvious, right? And so this is a really good moment for those of you that are listening that are cooks and or perhaps not cooks or want to learn about food, is that actually there is no fear. And let me tell you, there have been some things that I've thrown together. What's the worst? I don't know. You name it. I still can't get over my banana cream pie. That was something different.
I would have submitted that banana cream pie to a pie contest. I thought it looked delicious. I never got to taste it because Brenton threw it in the garbage.
I wish I would have made a semifreddo out of it. If I had one regret in life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. Okay. But yeah, I think. This is a good moment where, you go to the market, you have all the stuff. And then a lot of people look at cookbooks or say, what should I cook? And the answer is just make enchiladas. No, the answer is that you can...
with whatever you have.
That just... you can throw shiso in guacamole. You can throw different herbs. I don't want to use the word fusion, but I think as we have all these ingredients...
You watched that episode of Sex and the City. So you're thinking about fusion.
Okay, I watched I think it was season 3, episode 2.
Yeah.
And it was where in Sex and the City... and it starts off in the restaurant called Fusion.
The 90s.
Yeah. And anyway, Samantha had dated the brother of the owner.
Yeah. So you talk about fusion on the brain.
Yeah. They talk about okra. And anyway.
Yeah.
I was talking about fusion.
So anyway, yes. What you were saying made a continue, please.
I have been more liberal with what my rules are. You can't put chives in guacamole.
Right.
Who would put... there are no rules.
Yeah.
And guess what? We're not trying to... I'll tell you a little story.
Oh, please.
Ready?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Story time.
Ready as
well. Story time. A long time ago, I decided to open a restaurant.
Okay.
Once upon a time. Okay. And I remember in my menu planning, thinking, oh, what should I do? And I asked a very well-known chef, and I won't name that chef, but it's somebody that I told you the name, everybody would say, wow, at least in New York, you know?
Okay.
And I wanted to put nachos and chicken liver pate on the menu, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the same menu. And this particular person said, you can't do that. You can't do that. This was 5 years ago, right?
Uh-huh.
4 years ago, when I was planning the menu, probably 5 years, 4 years ago. And I remember they said, oh, you just can't do that. You have to pick something because it's just not the way. Okay, fast forward 4 years later, every restaurant in Brooklyn and New York has a multitude of opposing things, French-based things.
Yeah.
I often see a plate of tacos on the same menu as...
Totally. Well,
something else.
Yeah. I think that's like based the menu thing for me, like the way that things are going now is it's based in your confidence behind what you do. I mean, mm-hmm. we started doing that at Brucey too.
Yeah,
and
you
were just like
ahead of the,
I would be like, yeah, we're going to do, we did nachos. We did, you know, like all kinds of crazy things like General Cho's half chicken. And then, but it was an Italian restaurant, but you find a way, like it's your confidence in it. You can find a way to make it work. You're like, no, this is cool. If you're clueless about it and you're like making that, now we're on a menu tangent, but if you're clueless about it and you're like, I have all Japanese menu and a Greek salad because you don't, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You don't
get it. Remember when you did Greek nachos?
Yes. I love all kinds of nachos. Also, there's that nacho cookbook that I'm in.
Mm-hmm. The short.
Hang on.
The goddess of nachos has, well, so it just goes to show that you can just do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly. Just have fun with cooking and the things that you're making. And
speaking of menus, not to interject, but there was, I was telling somebody about this the other day, and if you are so inclined to press applause on this podcast, and
press the applause button the whole time.
Press pause, and you can go onto the New York Public Library online website,
okay,
on the interweb.
Oh, on the interweb.
And you can look up, there's an archive of all the menus that anybody has I guess scanned and sent in.
Really?
From all of New York restaurants dating as far back as they date back, as far as we have them.
That's amazing.
And so that what they did is you can look at very old menus from, I mean, the 1700s, the 1800s.
That's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, and they scan them, and you can do it from the privacy of your, you can do it on your iPhone.
Wow, can you vacillate while you're doing it?
Yeah, I was just about to say you can do it while you're vacillating between a plum cornmeal cake and a plum almond cake.
That's funny. So speaking of vacillating, if you're vacillating about whether or not you should give some love to this podcast, like maybe a rate, review, subscribe, mm-hmm. kind of vibey, maybe even visiting our Patreon page to donate to us so we can continue to vacillate.
Mm-hmm. And we will send you private videos
of vacillating
and macerating.
And macerating.
I macerated some peaches last night that you
did?
Wouldn't believe.
Were they amazing?
I didn't. I did it the day before.
We actually got an email from somebody about macerating peaches the other day, and they were wondering if we could macerate them. I think they said in cognac. So,
yeah,
writer, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Kristen S., we really appreciated your email, and we got back to you. And yes, you can marinate them in cognac. You can macerate them in really whatever you want. That's the thing that kind of, tying back to what we were just saying, like, get creative. You know, if you have some, like, shiso, just put it, basically this is a plum and shiso podcast.
Plum,
so
yeah, plum.
Should you find yourself with some plums or shiso?
Plum, shiso, and spatchcock podcast.
Exactly.
Those are the only three things you should be doing in 2018.
Spatchcock, your plums,
don't worry,
and
we'll keep you ahead of the curve. We already got 2019 ready to go, but we're not going to release it until November 1st. Okay.
So today's topic, kiddos, thanks for joining us again for lucky number 14. We are going to talk about a very fun topic today.
Oh my gosh, something that's very near and dear and close to my heart.
To everybody's heart and butt, actually. And mm-hmm. the topic today is diets through the decades.
Diets, fads, nutrition, eating,
mm-hmm.
Not eating.
Pooping.
No.
Growing up.
I'm going to say something right now.
Please.
Can I ask myself a question?
Yes.
Sarah, thank you.
Absolutely.
I stopped waiting for you to ask me a question. I'm just going to ask myself.
Brenton, can I ask you a question? Just ask yourself that.
I don't know about you, but I've had a lot of different types of relationships with food throughout my life.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
What about you?
Yes, 100%.
You know, people wonder how we stay so fabulous looking. On the radio.
That is what we are getting flooded with emails about.
Yeah, but like, how do you do it? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. There are several diets we use. We often use the breakup diet.
Oh, yes. The breakup diet is
we use
my number
the,
one.
I'm pretend I'm not hungry, drink water diet.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the I ran 10 miles and I will intermittent fast diet.
Yep. That's another one.
And then there's the I will eat a whole chocolate cake diet.
That's also fine.
I don't know.
These all work. All kinds of, yeah, but you know, people's relationships with food are interesting. You know, like in my teenage years I struggled with an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this point in my life I feel pretty comfortable about my relationship with food. But I was talking with our good friend the other day about how women, and I guess maybe you can speak to the male side of this, but I don't know how men feel about it, but women, no matter how good you look or how good other people think you look or how fit you are. Like, we do all still have an issue. Not, you know, I'm not going to say all. Many women still have an issue when they look in the mirror and be like, oh, you know, I just wish my like stomach was a little flatter.
Yeah, of course. I'm a gay man in New York.
And then I was talking to her and I was like,
40 plus.
Yeah. And I was like,
think about that.
You know what? What a waste.
What a waste of time.
You know what I mean? Of all this time when we get this short little amount of life, and sometimes it's cut like terribly short, you know, knock on wood.
Mm-hmm.
But if I, at the end, I asked her, I was like, you know, if you're on your deathbed right now and you, somebody added up all the time you spent thinking about that like, your ass was too fat or like you didn't have a good enough thigh gap, I'm like, would you feel good about that time spent?
I woke up this morning and looked at my stomach in the mirror. I said, I guess so.
Yeah.
And then I went and had a piece of Spanish tortilla.
You know what? I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I think in my, you know, when I look at myself naked in the mirror, I vacillate. No, when I look at myself naked in the mirror, I'm like, hey, you look good, girl. You know, or in clothes, whatever. But I still, so like my aware brain is like, okay, you are a healthy person. You have a healthy body. You look good. But I still nitpick at myself all the time.
Of course.
Like, I think about, you know, when I'm eating or drinking something as I get older, I'm like, okay, well, I drank like, you know, 7 or 8 glasses of wine tonight. Well, I won't eat dinner. Just kidding. But, you know, seriously, I do, as I get older, particularly negotiate more and more because I want to keep looking good. And I also want to be this person who's like, oh no, I eat whatever I want and I don't care and I don't let that rule my life. But in reality, I do think about it a lot.
There is a stigma in case everybody's, you know, just go on Instagram and look at healthy eating, clean eating. I actually came across a post from, you know, that guy, Daniel Isengard.
Yeah.
That writes that. He wrote The Art of Gay Cooking.
I was just listening to him on the Food Scene podcast.
Yeah, he had a little post on Instagram, whether he knows it or not, but it was really cool. He said, healthy eating, what does that mean? And it made me think, what is all food is healthy? If you're starving and you have zero food,
yeah,
and you come across a Big Mac, that Big Mac will keep you alive.
Will nourish you. That's interesting.
So there's that. And saying like, oh, I want to eat clean. Like, oh, we don't eat fried food. And I stopped first of all, I love food. And I stopped ever telling myself a few years back. I said, I don't care. I'm going to eat whatever I want when I want it. However, moderation. Mm-hmm. And I will try to balance it out.
Absolutely.
And I did gain 40 pounds, not too far in the back. And it was.
You showed me a picture of your back. Yeah. The other day.
I gained 40 pounds. It was after when I sold my restaurant. I was very stressed out.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of stuff to do. And I just ate and ate and ate. And it was delicious.
That's good. You had fun.
And then I realized, I was like, great, let's...
And you went on a diet, which is what our topic is about today, is dieting.
Dieting.
So I'm gonna tell y'all a little bit about the history of dieting from what I've been able to find. Surely there is much more that I'm going to miss. We're going to give you an abbreviated history here. An abbreviated history of dieting in 1028. No, just kidding. I'll go at normal time since Brett and sister is allegedly listening to the podcast on 1.5 times. If I then started speed talking, her brain might explode.
We decided to slow it down.
Carly, you can still listen to it on 1.5. Now it will sound normal.
Normal.
Okay, so the year 1028, a gentleman by the name of... It was a very good year for small town conquerors of England. So William the Conqueror was born. He was a king of England. Mm. He became so fat over the course of his life that he couldn't ride his horse anymore.
Oh,
and so
that was very important back then.
You must be able to ride a horse.
They were the Bugattis of the modern age.
They're like, oh, do you see my new horse? It's got suicide hooves.
Oh, you should see him trample over that green grass on the... I don't know. He went to Ireland.
So anyway, he got so fat that he decided to put himself on an all liquor diet so he could ride his horse again.
Definitely have done that. Gotcha.
Samesies, called the breakup diet in modern times. And he lost the weight, but then when he got back on his horse, he fell off and died.
Knock.
What an idiot.
It's like a summer diet when you fall off your horse. Isn't it ironic?
Oh my God. So then we're moving up like 500 years.
Yeah.
Italian nobleman Luigi Conorano dieted on 12 ounces of food per day and 14 ounces of wine per day, otherwise known as the Bergdorf diet.
What's the... Wait, I worked there.
I know.
I worked at Bergdorf.
No, that's where I got it from.
I drink a bottle of pink champagne every day.
Yeah, so you were on this diet basically then. He lived to be 120.
Well,
they call it the immortal diet. People believe that this will make you immortal. God,
12 ounces. Hold on, I'm going to write that down right now.
Yeah, it's already written down. I made show notes today.
Oh, perfect.
Exactly.
You can go to our non-website.
Yes, go to our website.
You can just email
just wait there
us
for
and
us.
I'll call you. Yeah. I'll call you back. That's better than a website.
Totally, it
just,
is.
Just like text me.
Yeah.
Or just DM us on Instagram and I will, Zara or myself will...
We promise we'll call
we
you.
We will use our own fingers to type a message with our own brains.
We'll call you from a payphone.
Yeah. There's a couple.
We'll call you collect.
Yeah, we'll call you collect.
Hello, Life's Banquet.
Hello, it's going to cost you $1.50. Go ahead.
So, moving up again to the year 1724, one of the first known dietitians, George Cheyne, who was an English guy, he was the first guy to write a booklet about losing weight. He was really fat, and so he decided to just eat vegetables and drink milk. He cut out fat and meat, and he published an essay in 1724 called Health and Long Life. He was kind of, there's not much more interesting about that guy, but he was kind of the first known dietitian. Now, 3 years later, a guy named Thomas Short develops a diet called the Avoiding Swamps Diet.
I know. Yeah. Avoid the swamps.
He theorized...
What does that mean? I don't know. I'm just
kidding. Theorized that this is... Listen. Listen, people, I know that we have listeners in Florida, Alabama, Louisiana right now. Do not get offended by this, but this is not what I'm saying. Thomas Short said this. He said that your proximity to a swamp makes you fat.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Essentially, swamp things.
Yeah. Well, so in New York City in August, when we're living in swamp-like situations,
exactly.
we should get out of New York.
Exactly. Otherwise, we're going to get fat.
Huh. I was wondering what was happening.
So basically, he had the swamp thing, avoiding swamps diet, which I don't even understand what that means. The first popular diet in kind of modern history was called Banting, and it was named after William Banting, who was a freaking undertaker. And he wrote a booklet in 1863 called A Letter on Corpulence Addressed to the Public. And corpulence, for anyone who doesn't know, is basically like obesity.
Interesting.
It was pretty simple. It just had four meals a day, fish, meat, grains, dry wine, and people would say to themselves,
do you bant?
Oh, yes, I bant every once a week.
Oh, I'm banting.
Oh, it's Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Mm-hmm. I only bant.
Exactly. Then, yeah. Banting meant dieting. It's interesting, isn't it?
And what? Because he was an undertaker, he felt he just knew dead people and knew what was going on.
I guess
so.
He's like, oh, this guy also died because he didn't eat enough vegetables.
Yeah, I dug out his insides and I found out that,
exactly.
that he had pieces of hamburgers stuck. They didn't have hamburgers yet.
It was all plum cake.
That was plum pudding.
Full of plum cake and Spanish tortilla.
It was August 14th of 2014 is when I literally started the ketogenic diet. Like, just cold turkey, went straight into it, stopped eating all sugar, carbs, and starches, like, that day. I believe it was a Monday. And it was
classic
pretty
Gemini.
Hellish for the first, I'd say, 2 to 3 weeks.
So that was Stephen Weix, who is fabulously living in a fabulous Taiwanese province just south of Taipei. Food lover, food writer. He had gone to culinary school. And a very, very good friend of mine.
And then the first weight loss book that was written to promote calorie counting was
counting.
Written calorie counting, 1918 by Lulu Hunt Peters.
Wow.
So that's kind of like a small history of the diet. Did you ever see that movie, The Road to Wellville?
No.
I think I told you about it recently.
You did, yes.
Please, everyone out there, after you finish listening to this 4 or 5 times on repeat, because it's so interesting, go watch the movie The Road to Wellville with Matthew Broderick and Anthony Hopkins. It's really funny, and like, it's about the turn of the century, basically, when people started getting into wellness, and it's filmed at the Mohonk Mountain House, which is a cool
place.
Oh, I
must watch that immediately.
It's really cool. It's like a really fun...
Hey, Siri, remind me to watch Road to Wellville later.
Bretton Siri is an Australian gay man.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
I don't know. He's a gay man.
It's... so awesome.
He has a lot of attitude. He's like, no, Breton, I didn't say that. Shut the hell up.
I didn't like The Road to Wellville. I will not remind you to watch it, Breton.
And is your butt getting bigger? Sorry, just an observation.
I've been in your pocket for the past 3 hours. Seems like your butt's growing.
Yes. Please do a podcast on dieting. May I recommend?
So, some celebrity diets.
What? Celebrities, because celebrities know everything.
Oh, yeah, celebrities know everything. But this is what I thought was interesting. Andy Warhol used to diet by ordering food that he didn't like at a restaurant, and then so he wouldn't eat it.
Well, that wouldn't work for us. I know. We like everything.
I know. I was trying to think before, like, what do you think he didn't like? Tomato soup? The irony.
He probably
Isn't
had...
it ironic?
Yeah. Andy Warhol probably didn't like... I don't know. I don't do bread, soups... stews or braised things.
Soups and stews.
I don't know. And probably everything was braised. Nothing with the color red in it, and nothing with repeated patterns of green and browns together.
Basquiat, what would you like? And then he would take his leftovers and give them to homeless people, which is very nice. Elvis Presley followed what I have found is called the Sleeping Beauty Diet, which is a real thing where people OD on sleeping pills and like other barbiturates and fall asleep and pass out in a drug coma, a drug-induced coma for so long that they don't eat.
Yeah, and isn't that which ended up?
Yeah, really
which
worked.
Ended up leading to his death.
Yeah, because it like impacts your bowels.
His demise was because of his pill popping.
Can you imagine if that's like where your head's at? You're like, oh yeah, I feel like the best thing to do here is to just drug myself to sleep so I don't eat. Like, get some self control.
At that point, just do some Adderall. I do know this about Elvis.
Okay.
He loved Dexedrin, which is the modern day Adderall.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, yeah. It, basically, what they did with Adderall for the 99% of millennials that are currently taking on Adderall right now is that. And by the way, I used to do Adderall a lot, and I can tell you that that stuff's bad. But for
Real
hunger,
bad.
It simply
Works.
Makes you. It's not that it doesn't make you hungry. It makes you not think about food.
Yeah, you're just so busy like cleaning the bathroom.
Well, like the thought, I don't know. I remember thinking about it and food just becomes, it's like dust on the floor. Mm-hmm. You're like, no, thanks. Mm-hmm. I don't do that.
Yeah.
I don't do food.
No, I've quit. Oh, food is so 2017.
What is that? Yeah. So, okay.
So anyway, Marilyn Monroe, I read that her diet that she would do was she would start each day with 2 raw eggs whipped in warm milk.
Classic.
Skip lunch.
Like what you're doing.
And then she consumed broiled liver, steak, or lamb with 5 carrots and finished with a decadent hot fudge sundae.
Hey, she had balance.
Good for you, girl. Oh, I should mention I got a lot of this information from theconversation.com.
Oh, yeah. Love that website.
My favorite celebrity diet ever, which is The Rock's diet.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So,
oh, my goodness.
For anyone who doesn't know, first of all, following The Rock on Instagram is the greatest joy of my entire life. I live for his cheat days because this is how he eats all week. He works out like a crazy person. Then he cheats by eating like stacks and stacks of pancakes covered in peanut butter, which I will say, if I had all of The Rock's money and resources, I don't know. I just have always thought maybe like, but I guess he likes what he likes.
Hey, everybody gets their
thing. I guess I'm not like really into pancakes, so I judge him. But then I also saw the other day he ordered like 8,000 sushi rolls. So each day he starts the day with a 10-ounce filet of meat, 4 egg whites, 5 ounces of oatmeal. Then he eats 8 ounces of chicken, 2 cups of rice, and 1 cup of broccoli.
I'm surprised it says white rice. I'm surprised he doesn't use brown rice.
I know. What's the deal? The
fiber. Fiber's the key.
And then this is halibut, but I've read cod, but they're kind of similar.
A white fish.
8 ounces of cod, 2 cups of rice, 1 cup of asparagus, meal 4, 8 ounces of chicken, a baked potato, a cup of broccoli, meal 5, another 8 ounces of, let's say cod, 1.5 cups of rice, 1 cup of asparagus,
okay.
Meal 6, 8-ounce filet, a baked potato, a salad, meal 7, casein protein?
Casein protein.
Jeez. 10 egg whites with onions, peppers, and mushrooms. And then I have here at the bottom, I did
the
math.
You've totaled the math.
That's 68 pounds of cod a month.
I'm sorry, that's overfishing.
He's eating all the cod out of the ocean. The Rock, we need to put you on blast for this. That's too much cod.
And also, if you ever look at the pinworms in cod.
He's eating like at least 10 pounds of worms a month.
I hope you're cooking that to 165 degrees.
Anyway, that's my favorite thing.
You know...
I love that.
Yeah, that's
so much fucking protein.
That's a lot of protein. Now, listen, he's a big guy.
I love The Rock.
He's a Hollywood celebrity, and he has roles to fill that require him to be a certain amount of size. Most of us do not have that problem.
He could eat a live horse. I wouldn't care. I love him.
Yeah, I should put input what I eat per month, per day.
You should. You eat probably like,
let's see. A lot of potato chips and a lot of crackers.
Like 40 pounds of plums a month.
40 pounds of plums a month. 70 orders of French fries.
Yeah.
2 cups of mayonnaise. Actually, probably more.
More like than
4
that.
Cups
yeah,
of mayonnaise.
Yeah, probably 4 cups of mayonnaise. Do you want to know how many jars of almond butter I eat a month? This is real.
4.
Like, at least, like, maybe 5 if it's a
so
month with a
one
couple
a week, a good yeah. one a week, yeah. And you yeah. live alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Single white female.
Single white female eating a shit ton of almond butter.
Zara's doing the single white female part 2, and it's actually a really... It's a performance art piece instead of a film because there wasn't that much subject matter and there was no need for any other
actors.
I just
mimicked myself eating almond butter. That's why I have so much. Mm-hmm. There's 2 of me. Okay, so my diet that I picked for today to talk about, though, that we have been touching on a lot over the past couple of weeks for some reason.
Well,
it's trending.
The 90s are alive and well
it's
here
trending.
In Brooklyn. So.
You've heard it here first. I guarantee this is going to be on everybody's minds and hearts and bodies.
Bretton, and what's this?
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Stop the insanity.
Stop it. You stop your insanity right now.
Hey. That's right. Susan Powder, stop. But we asked in a podcast what insanity was she speaking of?
Fat.
Okay.
She hated fat.
That's where Snackwells came in.
Yeah.
Screw you, Snackwells.
Yeah, it was just full of sugar. They actually made people so much more. Because as we know now... Although I guess we could be told differently and then we'd believe it. But like fat actually doesn't make you fat.
Fat does not. My brother switched his diet. He had an issue called SIBO or something. And he went to a very high fat diet. Mm-hmm. He does the butter coffee in the morning with the coconut oil.
I need to try
MCT
that.
Oil.
What is that called?
They call it Bulletproof Coffee, but that's copyrighted. So it's just whatever. Apparently that guy invented it.
Got it.
He probably didn't. He probably stole it from somebody in Australia.
I think I saw it. Were you at, is there a place in Denver called Bulletproof Coffee?
Maybe, but they have it. But the idea is you blend this coffee with a bunch of fat, and that's your fuel in the morning, and it fuels your brain. And my brother lost a lot of weight, and he eats pretty much whatever. He doesn't eat all. He's very limited.
Your brother, who's just here, your brother Aaron.
Yeah, but he eats large quantities. And that's not what it's about. It's about the fact that he doesn't exercise, and he's thinner than I am.
God damn him.
And he's older.
God. Damn him.
Older, thinner, and you eat more. See, look at I do have an issue.
I was about 394 pounds.
Okay. And you were just done with it.
Yep. I was in Korea, actually, on a little vacation and picking out as usual, which I still do. But I don't know what clicked or what happened, which made me like, but I remember it was while I was in Korea, and I knew that when I got back, like as soon as I woke up in my own bed after that trip, that I was going to do this ketogenic.
Yeah. Well,
well
so
listen,
I,
stop that insanity.
Stop
right
the
now.
Insanity. I got this information from Mental Floss. So for any of you youngins out there who don't remember Susan Powder, she was an absolutely crazed woman who seemed actually very nice, but super crazy.
Well, I'm looking at this little tidbit you have written here.
Yeah, please.
I'm
go
cheating
ahead.
Ahead.
Read. Go ahead.
No, I'm just reading it. It's your notes.
Oh,
but
she, yeah.
The M&M story?
Yeah. So she was like, she was an import from Australia. She was born in the year 1957 and moved to the U.S. 10 years later from the Outback. With just one koala in her pocket. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's Australian-ish. So she went through a bad divorce in the 80s. You know, I'm not going to detail every moment of her life.
Cheating.
She got a cheating ass husband. He got her pregnant with Irish twins. For any of you who don't know, that's when you're born within 2 years of each other.
Within a 13, it's 13,
13 months.
Yeah.
So she had 2 kids. Her husband is cheating, left her. He had a sick, sick mullet. The pictures of him are insane.
Oh, we should post that.
She went from being 100. We will. We can post them on our Instagram. We'll do an Instagram post about Susan Powder and her mullet-headed husband. She went from 130 pounds to 260 pounds, but she said by eating M&Ms and like watching soap operas. Oh, P.S. got all this information about her from Mental Floss.
Mm-hmm. Great magazine.
.com. So she, you know, she became a big blob.
Mm-hmm.
And
tiny little Aussie to a large American. That's what happens when you move to America.
Exactly.
You get the American 130.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the American 5 score of pounds. Yes, yes.
Yeah, she got real fat. And so she basically didn't do anything except for, like, it says diet and, like, walk around. She didn't even necessarily, I guess maybe she did aerobics, but what I read initially was that she just, like, walked and, like, stopped eating M&Ms.
That's how we, in the 1980s, that's how we got through a lot of things.
And
aerobics.
And then later, obviously, she became an aerobics queen and made aerobics videos. But so her mom passed away, and she used the $250,000 she got from her death to open a wellness center in Dallas where she lived.
Oh, well, that's her.
Charlie Horse.
Well, that's her first problem. God. Nothing against. Do we have any listeners in Texas?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So lots of listeners in Texas. We are not judgmental of Texas, but I heard that that's, and I'm from Wisconsin. Now, Texas and Wisconsin often battle between the two fattest states.
Oh, really? I'm from Long Island, where everyone is perfect and thin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And glamorous.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's only dens.
And delusional. Go ahead.
So she opened a wellness center, and she would also go around accosting, like, random women in the supermarket and being like, why are you buying that? There's too much fat in that. Do you know what you're going to do to your body? And
try this. It's Steakwells. Yeah.
She didn't have really an Australian accent.
Oh, well. Luckily, I didn't either.
Perfect.
Luckily, mine was not even close to Australian. Perfect. It's actually a Susan Powder accent for those.
Exactly.
Thank you.
She just had, like, an aggressive accent of, like, I don't even know how. Just watch her videos. But if somebody came up to me in the motherfucking supermarket and told me not to, like, that I was buying something wrong, I mean, that's just the kind of thing I don't like.
I would punch them.
Yeah. I'd be like, listen, girl, don't step to me with that bald head and those crazy fucking eyebrows. You know what? I shouldn't even talk badly about her, because actually there's part of me that really does like and respect her.
Well, she did stop the insanity.
She did. But yeah, the fat craze, it was definitely a thing in the 80s and 90s where people were like, no fat, no fat. Everything was no fat. And like now we know. But I also have met people nowadays who don't quite know about fat not being in me anymore.
Yeah, but still, they didn't get the memo.
She was going up to strangers, telling them. Yeah. I was in a store the other day, in a clothing store. This is just a sidebar. And I was trying on a dress, and a random woman offered me, like, her opinion. She starts touching her boobs. And
I offer you my unsolicited opinion, she said, well, correct?
No, but I'll tell you how. And then she starts, like, touching her boobs and looking at them, kind of. And I go, what's going on? And she's like,
why do you always have?
She goes like this. She goes, you can see your bra. And I go, thank you for your unsolicited advice. I was so offended. I was just like, I don't know. I shouldn't have lost my patience. Now that I'm repeating the story.
Where does she live?
Well, her address is 115. I don't know.
321 School Street.
I don't know. I ran out of the store. I was so embarrassed. Just still, you know what? Still wearing the outfit.
I was in my local bodega store last night. Mr. Mango.
Monsieur Mango.
Monsieur Mango.
P.S. There's a Mr. Plum in Greenpoint I walked by yesterday.
And there's a Mr. Melon.
It's a trend.
In Bed-Stuy. Well, listen. Everywhere. There was a girl last night. And I was buying dragon fruits, shallots, and limes.
Of course, classic. As one does.
Yeah. Gazing at the lychees, wondering if I could afford for $3.99 a pound, which was a good price. But that woman, she had a side boob. Uh-huh. She was wearing overalls.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Her boob was hanging out.
Look at what you see right now. Explain what you see on my body.
Oh my God, that's a side boob.
Side boob through my vintage
Available
operation.
On Instagram.
Yeah.
This is our $100 a month Patreon members. Please let you know that we will be showing
side boob.
Mr. Mango side boob pictures. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. We won't, because we don't believe in that. But.
Well, Susan Powder probably would have liked that, but she did not like full fat peanut butter. I'll tell you that. So she's accosting people in the supermarket. She's getting crazed. She shaves her head. She loses 130 pounds. And she teams up with Dallas area PR agent Rusty Robertson, who helps coise the frame, you guessed it, stop the insanity. Stop it, stop it, stop it. 1993, they make their first infomercial, and they sell kits for $79.80 that include 5 audio tapes, an exercise video, recipes, fat content guide, and this last part, I have no idea what it is, a skinfold caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Can measure your fat.
Oh, perfect.
Right?
I guess. I mean, unless it's an actual caterpillar made of skin. That's what it sounded like to me. So in the first week, they sold 200,000. And in 1993 alone, guess how much money she made?
Millions.
50 million American, not you, not Australian.
That's a, we're switching careers. We are now a,
I know.
We are now a Stop the Insanity podcast.
She didn't have any training. She would always say on her videos, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nutritionist. They wouldn't have me. Doctors, they wouldn't have me either.
She's just Susan Powder.
She's like, I'm just a housewife. She kept talking about herself as just being a housewife, but she looked like a militant, like, I don't know, some kind of outlier. She definitely didn't look like just a housewife. You know what I mean? She looked like she was like in a punk rock band. So some of her big things that she was quoted as saying, fat makes you fat. Women need to be fit to combat the patriarchy. Her videos included extreme yelling, lots of spandex, very overweight people in the videos doing the aerobics next
to
her.
Wait a second, that sounds like Bushwick 2018.
Exactly.
That sounds like what's going on now.
Well, everything comes back around, Breton. But that's true. Thought it was interesting that her videos were like full of like overweight people because it just seemed like she wanted to look good next to them.
You know, if I had to do it all over again, I would do a Susan Powder and Richard Simmons podcast.
Yeah.
But we can just briefly talk about Richard Simmons and his story. I read his story a few months ago, and I thought about doing a little episode on him, but
it's not true. I mean, we still
can. No, I just think it's just important to remember that he struggled with his weight. Mm-hmm. And do you remember a few months ago, Richard Simmons went missing?
But it allegedly, but then he was like, I'm not missing. I'm right here. It's just,
there's a lot going on, but yeah. He worked in restaurants too.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He was a maitre d' or something, manager at restaurant.
Can you imagine? He's like, and it's going to be five of you. Write this. Wait, 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 wait.
But I loved how in his videos he had overweight people doing exercises to show that.
Totally, that you can do it if you're overweight. But
yeah, and that's a process to.
I just thought maybe a mix of overweight and not overweight people. Anyway. Almost done here. Ended up living with her ex-husband, living downstairs in the same house. And she and he both were crying about it on a Connie Chung special. Absolutely blew my mind.
Oh, wow.
She then disappears in the mid to late 90s. We don't hear anything else from her. She goes bankrupt over a fight with her ex-business partner, but gets to keep the rights to the phrase. And now is the owner and operator of a crazed Twitter feed that makes absolutely no sense. Please go to it.
I don't want to talk about Susan Powder anymore. She's crazy.
She's crazy. She has like blonde dreads now. If you're listening, SP, this is...
You know what?
I respect what you tried to do. You were just a simple Eminem guzzling housewife who got your act together. But that is one of the craziest diets ever.
You know, sometimes money can make or break you. So I believe she was just trying to... She was trying to stop her own insanity.
Mm-hmm.
But I was coming across something, right?
Yeah.
Because we were talking, you know, as we just said, mentioning diets and this, that, the other. And at the ripe old age of, you know, 40 plus here in New York City, and, you know, I still feel fabulous. I don't know about you, but number one, don't have any more limits. I stop saying, don't eat this, don't eat that.
I don't really either. I don't really eat sugar.
I don't like the word, I'll tell you.
I will eat it, but I don't eat it a lot.
We'll probably get a lot of hate mail, but I don't like the word cheat day.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like the word healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and this is for myself. I'm not criticizing others. I don't like to say those things to myself because I have had many issues with food where I'll go in these crazy, wackadoodle things. And I end up living in, I just end up feeling so anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I know because I really want it. There was a time I gave up dairy, cheese, meat, and I was nearly vegan. I would eat raw fish and eggs.
Oh, wow.
And I guess they call that a flexitarian, sort of pescatarian, kind of, but
you're a bretitarian.
Depending on my mood, I also would just not eat for a day or two.
Yeah.
And I was very thin. Mm. I was gorgeous. But there was... I had an 8-pack. I was fabulous.
There are pictures of it. I have one.
But... And I actually felt really good because I felt very, well, I was young, first of all, it was summer, but I was so hungry all the time and I was very angry. And I had a lot of friends that knew me at that time and they said I was really anxious and I wasn't myself and I wasn't showing the true beauty because I am a food lover.
Yeah,
duh, we're doing this podcast.
Part of your life that is so great.
I felt like I was denying myself of, and so anyway, here we are. I read this book from... a while back called The 10th Muse, My Life in Food by Judith Jones.
Ooh.
And this is not a book report, but this is Judith Jones wrote this book She helped bring Julia Child. She was one of the editors from Knopf Publishing. Knopf. Yeah, and basically she talks about her whole life in food. And wow, she and Julia cool. became very good friends. It. Yeah, it's very good. She goes to France when she was younger. I mean, she was older than Julia Child, but she talks about this little thing, and she says there was a point. I love this. She said, "When I told him I was about 112 pounds, he laughed and, right in the middle of dinner, took my hand and led me to his bathroom scale. And she said the dial kept going up, and when the arrow reached 122 pounds, I was mortified." Now, she was 5'3", so she said, oh, okay,
that's
another
still
10.
Very small for 5'3".
She talked about then she denied herself, and she would eat carrots and milk for lunch.
Wow.
And she was
odd
younger.
Odd combo.
Yeah, carrots and milk, classic. And then she talks about how she just would. She said, I would sip ginger ale while everyone else guzzled thick chocolate milkshakes and ice-creamed sodas. And she said, I could have easily become anorexic, a term not even used in vocabulary then. And this is probably in the 1940s. And then she said, fortunately, my food genes cried out for satisfaction because she was a food lover and she ended up, you know, making cookbooks and she was a cookbook editor.
Yeah.
And that's just part of the job. And so she said when her time in France, she learned about moderation.
Yeah.
And that when I look at a pastry now, I just think of its beauty and that it is something to be respected, right? Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that we have to have pastries every morning or that. And again, my name is not Susan Powder, and I'm not trying to tell you what to do. But yeah. Check out my website and my Twitter for account, and if you pay me $10 a month, I'll tell you everything to do. No, that I learned myself, like when I lost my 40 pounds that I gained, I actually never, ever stopped doing it. I never stopped eating anything. I started just thinking, oh, hey, you love a good chili relleno burrito, but have a fourth of it.
Right.
What was your relationship with food like? And what, I don't know, what do you, would you describe yourself as an overeater? Or a feeling eater?
I definitely became an overeater in middle school. I would say like grade 7, grade 8. And part of it was just like, you know, growing up gay in the Midwest and dealing with bullying and like low self-esteem. And like my biggest comfort was food.
Mm-hmm. Because it is delicious.
And that was always, my mom worked third shift. And so when I would come home from school, there was nobody there, but there was cupboards full of starchy and sugary snacks and a fridge full of anything. And I had free rein over the kitchen and I just... Yeah, I definitely overate. I most of my life, I'd say from probably age 14 until I was in my early 30s.
I do have a technique.
What is
you
it?
You want to hear my technique?
Yeah.
Because I am a rushed person. I have my faults. Today we're talking about Brett and Scott's faults days, okay? Yes, okay, enough already.
So, what did you think of when your mother said that to you?
Well, I don't know. But I do eat fast and I'm working on it. I've realized two things that help me to maintain balance.
Okay.
And that is chewing my food completely and slowly and enjoying the food and
totally.
And having gratitude for the flavors.
That was a diet, actually, where they told there was a diet fad where they said you needed to chew your food until it became absolute liquid.
There is something to that. It's easier in digestion. But second of all, I also realized that if I'm very hungry, I have a snack and then you have to wait 20 minutes because, you know, that's approximately the amount of time that it takes your stomach to send the signal to your brain.
Wow.
Right. So have you ever had that, like, I'm insanely hungry.
Yes.
And you down a bag of potato chips and you're just, and then suddenly an hour later, you're like, oh, I have a heartburn. I feel kind of gross and full. And of course I'm like, yeah, I didn't need to.
Yeah.
So have a snack, take a couple of deep breaths, drink some water,
totally.
You know. And also just, I don't know, the idea of a nibble. So I'm not saying that, oh, here's what you should do.
Yeah.
I just think that's kind of...
That's your advice for yourself.
Know.
And
also, if I'm hungry, then have a piece of cheese, not the whole block.
Absolutely. Well, you were telling me earlier that you were reading a little bit about the cabbage soup diet. What did you find? Anything interesting?
Okay, well, I did several diets in high school.
Okay.
I had a nickname in high school. People used to call me Fatty. I wasn't even fat. You know why they called me Fatty? There was a group of girls, and I think I got really mad.
That's so to the point.
They called me Fatty. I wasn't fat. But I
a bunch of rude bitches. Where are they right now?
They probably live.
Email Life's Banquet and send us a picture of what you look like now. Bitches who made fun of Breton. Like,
they're probably thin, or I'm probably thinner. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's no not about counting. Being. No one's counting calories. I am. No, that it led me to kind of become obsessed with working out and take.
Why did they call you fatty though?
I don't know. I think just because they knew it made me mad.
That's so rude.
I know. Well, high kids school. High school.
Oh,
in the
90s. Yay.
But high school fatty. What was I getting at?
Cabbage soup diet.
Cabbage soup diet. So I decided to go on the cabbage soup diet.
Okay. Fart
which
a lot.
Back in
lots
like 1990, you know, mm-hmm. we had those, the cobalt blue glasses.
Yeah.
Picture it.
Yeah.
1990. Cobalt blue glasses. Your tea towels in your kitchen were checkered with white and blue. Everything was white and blue.
90210 is on the airwaves.
90210 is on the war, yeah. What's it called?
Melrose Place?
Melrose Place. Party of Five. Oh. No, Party of Five was way later.
No, it was in the late 90s. In the mid-90s.
But I'm talking early 90s.
Oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
David Lynch. You know, think Twin Peaks David Lynch.
Ah, yes.
Cabbage soup diet. So what you do, you boil some cabbage, some mm-hmm. vegetables. Mm-hmm. You can... as a stock, you can use V8 or tomato juice. You can use water. Some people put beef in it. I did not. I kept it veg.
Mm.
And you eat cabbage soup. Where's the beef? Where's the beef? And you eat this cabbage soup, tomatoey, celery thing
mm-hmm.
for, you're supposed to eat it for 7, 8, 9 days.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to have guaranteed 10 pounds of, you're supposed to lose 10 pounds. Which of course, as we
I
know
love
now.
I cabbage soup.
Yeah, but after day 4, I started to get anxious.
Mm-hmm.
I was hungry, blah, blah, blah. So it turns out you just lose water weight. And then after the 8 days, you start eating hamburgers again. And then you gain more weight because you were so anxious. Okay, so this led me to research about the water fasting.
Okay.
And again, we're not a nutrition podcast.
And we're not recommending you do any diets. In fact, we're recommending you don't do.
So that we were talking about Upton Sinclair.
Yeah, because this is an Upton Sinclair and Plum podcast.
Yep. In combination with a spatchcocking and vacillating.
Yes.
So you can see the theme here. Upton Sinclair wrote a book, I think, in around 1910, and he had a lot of health problems. Shockingly, after he spent his year working
in the stockyard,
in the stockyards, in the meatpacking district, through those hard winters in Chicago, and he said he spent his summers in the Adirondacks and his winters in Bermuda. Lucky guy,
but he had
a lot of health problems, and he discovered that there was this thing called water fasting, and again, you can go and look this up. Water fasting is something that should be done under supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And then
personal choice. We're not
and
recommending
you actually
it.
Just drink water.
Then I'll do some long water fasts. Maybe I'd say maybe 3 a year where I'll do anywhere between five or six day fasts. And the longest one I've ever done is 13 days.
13 days. And it's 100% pure water. Nothing else.
I sometimes will have green tea as well, but yeah, no actual like calories.
Now, sometimes I think if you're an extreme food eater, you have to eat food for your job, maybe having a reset once in a while might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, and they say it's supposed to be really good if you have any kind of gastrointestinal issues, right? Mm-hmm. I was recommending that Bobby do it because she has colitis.
It can help with a lot of things. It allows your body to regenerate and so not focus on digestion. I have not done this yet. I'm actually going to do it. We just ran into our Starshin.
Yeah, Starshin did it.
Starshin,
for
one of Zara's
days.
Old employees. 9 days. He looked
great.
For 10
days.
Yeah. He said the first 2 days is really hard, and then the third day, you kind of go into this thing. So anyway, Steve, we're going to talk to him, and he's going to tell us a little bit about it. You know, it's interesting because you look on Instagram now, right? Everything's like ooey gooey cheese and egg and
slippery, sloppy, melted American.
You know,
cheese.
I look at that YouTube channel,
Slinkin'.
Binging with Babish, and it's all about these like obnoxious food, like meh. And I'm it sort of sends
stacks things when they're in stacks and they're dripping out of someone's hand. I'm like, what is this that we're doing here? What's going on?
I think it's funny if you don't have a problem with it, but I think it sends a bad message about food and what it is.
It's very overly dramatic. Everybody, come on.
Yeah, it's just food. But you know, sort of when we have these things and these images and cooking and this and steaks,
extreme.
Yeah, like seared steaks in the cast iron pan, dripping with fat. You know, all these things that are salted carbohydrates are delicious.
Yeah,
shocking.
Yeah, this just in from the wires, the Associated Press. Yeah. Carbs covered in
carbs
oil
covered
and salt are good.
Yeah. So I think we hear and see these messages all the time. Yeah. And I think it really, I know, again, I'm not preachy, but I will say, you know, Bretton Scott morning routine. I get up, I like bust it out. I'm like, hey, listen, I'm going to be eating a lot this weekend.
Yeah.
I just try to have a little bit of a balance.
Yeah, me too.
You know, sorry, so, you're a runner.
Well, yeah. So I guess on our chef recommends today, let's talk about balance. Like, what does that mean? Like, to
what do
you?
What do we do when we maybe have felt out of balance?
So the way that I keep my personal balance going all the time, as someone who's been a chef and as someone who
has worn a bikini on the line.
That is true.
You look fabulous.
I did wear a bikini behind the line. I was telling a new friend that the other day, and she was like, is that legal according to like the health code? And I was like, I don't think that they have a health code for it because it's so fucking absurd. Who would ever do something like that except for me?
I think you're fabulous for doing it. And
thank
I think you were young, and I think you won't do it again.
I would never.
And who cares?
But if you're out there and you're opening a restaurant, you want to just push your limitations and see how many customers you can get to never come back, wear a bikini behind the line in an open kitchen.
Meanwhile, before that, don't get me wrong, it was okay for male chefs to constantly make catcalls at women all the time.
So I was just I was taking the power back. So anyway, so you know, when I was actually working in the kitchen all the time, having to taste stuff, I would spit stuff out.
Yeah. And well, when you cook
for a living,
taste that much, you cannot eat everything.
I would always spit everything out. But in my normal life, I exercise. It's not just to keep my body looking good. It keeps my brain working good because I have a lot of anxiety.
Check out our side podcast called
Extreme All Anxiety. All of our problems.
Allofourproblems.com. There's 9,000 episodes.
I work out and I try to play the game with myself of thinking like, you know, hey, I'm going to have a very, like, I'll eat light today because, you know, this evening I'm going out. Like, last night I went out to Chez Matant for dinner and basically did the Atkins diet. It was so delicious, but we ate so much meat. Like, Jenny and I, it was just, like, meat, 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 meat. And it's not even, like, the restaurant isn't, like, super meat-centric. It's just we happen to eat everything with meat. But for me, I've mentioned on the podcast before that I lost my dad earlier this year. He died. He had cancer, but he was also obese.
He was very overweight.
He was very overweight. He struggled with weight throughout his life, but never so much as like maybe in the last 15 years. He just became really big and it really affected his ability to move around. The cancer wasn't necessarily what killed him, you know? He had multiple myeloma, but really his weight was a big problem. And so something that is a motivation for me is not just like vanity, although I'm not gonna lie, I am vain. You know, I want to look good and I want to feel good in my clothing and I want to feel good in my skin, and whatever feeling good in your skin is what feels good to you. So there's not a number on a scale that can make that's the right number, but for me, my motivation to find balance in my life, and I don't diet. I subscribe to a balanced lifestyle of indulging because like life's short and it can be over in a second, and also trying to stay fit because I don't want to end my life like my dad did and not be able to do things that I want to do because my body isn't the way I want.
Yeah, because guess what? I want to be able to walk around in Paris to the different pastry shops and take bites of things.
Yeah, and for me, the way like everyone defines their like sexuality differently and how they look to their partner or to, you know, whatever. So some people, they feel sexy when they're bigger. Some people, people feel sexy when they're smaller. You know, for that's something everyone has to define for themselves. I feel good when I look a certain way. I'm like an athletic person. I'm tall. I like to be a certain way. So I balance it, and I eat a shit ton of almond butter.
Almond butter. I'm a sardine person. Mm. You know what I love? Mark Bittman, if you follow him, he always said he runs in the morning and then he goes for a jog or runs or something, whatever you got to do. And then he tries to eat vegan until 7 p.m. or something.
Oh, wow. That's good.
That was his thing.
That's smart.
I just try to eat light throughout the day. And then, you know what? And I just get up every morning and I do a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I have my own little exercise routine.
Brenton's very big into exercise as
well. I'm very military. So, you know, I'm like, I get up, I'm like, military. I learned that from my grandpa.
Yeah.
Like, don't think about it. Don't like, do I want to go? Just do it. Just get up and be like, boom, bada boom, bada boom.
Yeah. I'm the same way.
Because,
I get exercise right first thing.
Cocktails at 5 p.m. are coming quick.
Exactly.
So you better get that out. But I think that just learning to do those things.
Yeah.
Then I don't want to worry about things.
People are always like, oh, wow, it's so hard to lose weight. And I'm not going to say it isn't, but with ketogenic, I think as long as you have a strong will to get through the first month, after your body switches metabolizing sugar to metabolizing fat for energy, your hunger just disappears and your energy level stabilizes and it actually becomes fairly easy.
Yeah, I want to enjoy the best that life has to offer that is available to me within my means, which for me is like eating delicious things and trying things and drinking. And so I try to, you know, counter that. The one thing I will say, I mentioned it before, that for me personally makes a difference in terms of like my physical appearance and also just the way I feel is not, I have found that not eating sugar helps. And I don't mean like any kind of sugar at all. Like, I do maple syrup on my, like a drizzle of maple syrup.
You're talking about white.
White sugar, baked goods, ice cream, stuff like that. If I went out to dinner last night and they sent over a lovely dessert, of course I'm going to have it. But I don't bring it, I don't seek it out.
Last night I had a singular scoop of grapefruit sorbet that I had made and it was delicious. It was a nice little scoop and I ate it and it was wonderful. And then to bed.
I'll have like 6 margaritas, but no.
Yeah, that
that doesn't count.
There's no sugar in that. Duh.
What are your, for the top three this week, what are your top three, like, if you had, I don't want to say diet foods, but what are your top three, like, cliche diet foods, like low-cal or like things you're going to eat when you are trying to...
Okay, let's say I've had a bit of a gluttonous month or something.
Yeah.
You know, I remember hearing, one of the food judges on Top Chef talking about that and... Anyway, I have fish.
Yeah.
Because first of all, I love seafood and fish, and I'll try to have a nice sustainable fish, and I'll just, you know, a baked fish is wonderful, and with some steamed or just lightly sauteed in olive oil, some greens, I love that.
Me too.
I think it's delicious. I don't call that diet food. I think it's another
just nice
form
food. Of, yeah.
I don't even, again, I told you, I don't like to use the word clean.
Right.
That's probably my top number one.
Okay.
Eating lots of fiber and fruit, and I don't mean like tons of fruit, but one piece of fruit, or I'll, you know, I'm a big smoothie guy.
Yeah.
But again, I don't like to obsess. I always throw greens in my smoothie.
Me too.
It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people that I love the flavor of weird, strange, bitter things.
Me too.
I like brown Schweiger peanut butter sandwiches.
Excuse me? brown Schweiger?
Brown Schweiger.
What's that?
That liver sausage.
Oh, I don't know.
Very popular in Wisconsin.
Never heard of it.
It's pureed liver. It's like liver.
Okay.
I think it's pork liver.
Pork liver.
Brown sugar. Anyway, and then that's number two. And then water. Water.
Good old fashioned water.
You stuff yourself full of water. It's good for you too.
It is good for you. A lot of water is good. And cotton balls. That was another diet. That was an actual diet. A cotton ball diet.
Yeah, vodka sodas are a real thing.
Vodka soda and cotton
Although
balls?
I will tell, I've heard a lot of people talking about this, and then I'll let you do your thing.
No.
People are confused about alcohol and about hard alcohol and what the amount of calories that drinking has.
Yeah.
There's a ton of podcasts about it and a ton of information, but in general, a shot of whiskey, cognac, or say rum.
Yeah.
Rum or just, they don't have carbohydrates or sugar in them because
they
are distilled spirit. So people think, oh, rum's sugar.
Oh,
no.
So really a whiskey soda is better for you than a vodka soda?
No,
not better for you. That's not the right way of putting it.
They are both very low in carbohydrates.
Okay.
And they have a low amount of sugar.
Oh, so it's the same.
Because it's a distilled liquor.
Got it. So it's all the same.
Yeah. It's not if you have a sweet rum flavored drink. Yes, of course.
Of course.
You're adding sugar to it. But a singular shot of rum.
Like a scorpion ball.
Like a scorpion bowl. Yes.
Scorpion bowl to the face.
Okay, so you tell me. What you got going on?
My top favorite diet foods, if I'm trying to... Well, whether I'm trying to cut back on calories or not, really, I mean, is pickles.
Oh, I forgot about pickles.
I love pickles.
Pickles are delicious.
Pickles are basically calorie-free, especially cucumber
They're
pickles.
They're salty.
A lot of salt.
A lot of water retention.
And also but a lot of vinegar, which is not always good for maintaining a good balance in your body, but...
Oh, yeah.
I do love a pickle and lacto fermented pickles. And in that group, I also put sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut, kimchi.
If I'm trying to.
So the cabbage soup diet is alive and well.
Yes. Maybe more of a cabbage salad diet. I do a lot of, like, I'm a light eater during the day too. So I'm the kind of person who will just eat, like, you know, some almond butter from the jar in the morning and then maybe some sauerkraut from the jar in the afternoon. And then an all meat buffet at one of my favorite restaurants for dinner.
Ponderosa. Love it.
Yeah, and then, exactly. And then I hit up the Ponderosa for some pasta, pasta paradise. Number two, I guess carrots, like whole carrots.
High in fiber.
I find them very filling.
Lots of vitamin A.
Yeah.
And good for your eyesight.
Yeah.
It's true.
And then...
all true things.
Number three for me, one of the other things that's a big part of my diet, my just normal all-the-time diet, but hummus. I sustain on like hummus. Anything smushy, you know, hummus is great for you. It's chickpeas. It's not like it's low in calories at all. It's actually quite high in calories.
I get a little thick. I get a little thick when I eat a lot of hummus.
Oh, you mean like your bowels? You get
no, like my stomach. No, like my
oh, makes you bloated.
Yeah.
Well,
thick.
I think I'm used to it by this point. But yeah, this is a very interesting topic. There was another diet I wanted to talk about. We'll do it another time. Called the pineapple juice diet.
Oh yes.
And people, I use that for multiple reasons, including some sexual reasons.
Oh my god.
Maybe we'll talk about that. I want to do a food and sex episode soon. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll do it then.
Well, listen, again, thank you for listening to now episode 14. Please send us your comments. We are loving all of the emails that we're getting. lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com.
Yes. And listen, rate, review, subscribe, go to our Patreon page. I just always wanted to say one thing that I wanted to mention during this dieting episode is that at some of the points in my life when I've been my thinnest, which is like, you know, we equate being thin to being like better or happier.
Yeah, getting it all together.
It's when I've been my most unhappy. It's been during breakups.
It's when I'm the most anxious.
Yeah. It's like you were saying that before, but I'm thinking about like whenever I get really thin, it's usually like after a breakup.
Well, the Buddha belly is a real thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, the happy, like, and you're not perfectly thin, but like you're eating and you're loving life. And
then I think I'm like, you know, oh, I loved when like my this part of my body looked like this. And then I'm like, you know what? You were so brokenhearted then, like that you weren't eating because you had no enthusiasm or zeal or zest. So I'd rather be 5 pounds heavier and feel like engaged and excited about my life. Then,
I remember when I had a 6/8 pack, all people would talk about is like I would go to the gay beach and they'd be like, oh
here God, he is.
You have a great body. And I was like, yeah, I know. And there's more than my body. Like, are you going to,
what about my brain?
Yeah. What about my brain, bro?
What about my butt?
I have 9 Beethoven sonatas memorized. Do you know which ones? Yeah.
You were like, just a piece of meat.
A piece of meat. And I remember thinking, I don't know. It's just funny, right? You're right. You think you think that's what makes you have it together.
It's not what it's about. Like, life is real short. Just be happy and try to feel good and healthy. That makes it easier to get through the world sometimes. But, you know, it's not about being thin. What is your... I want to actually ask you one question before we part.
Yes,
a positive. Well, first of all, we didn't tell people our shout outs for the week. What's your... any place that you like really liked
anywhere.
And went?
I haven't done
home.
A damn thing. Home.
Home has been good this week, cooking at home. So this week's our shout outs are home. And then I wanted to ask you, I think we should both say what our favorite body part is. A body part that could be of ours on our own bodies that maybe isn't perfect, but we like it. Just to put some positive spin, positive reinforcement on this.
I guess I'm looking around right now in the mirror and I love a good shoulder. I love my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Strong, manly shoulders.
Yeah. You do have really, really nice shoulders.
Square, gorgeous.
They're
I'm just kidding.
Beautiful.
I'm looking
perfectly
at
chiseled.
When Sarah Silverman, she said, oh, my long, gorgeous neck. it's so beautiful. No, shoulders are good. What about you?
I'm actually also going to, I think, say like the shoulder arm region. I really like this part right here. Like the tricep, kind of like not the tricep. What is this called? Like right from where your shoulder and it gets like, what is this?
An arm?
I guess my arms, my upper arms.
Upper arms. There's a name for that.
Yeah.
There's
my lower app. Arms are
there's
disgusting.
An app for that. Don't you dare look at her forearms.
I like my upper arms. And oh, actually, you know what? I do have a shout out I want to give.
Yeah.
My shout out is non-food related this week. But looking at my left upper arm, I just got a tattoo for my dad. It says Johnny in kind of an old Americana style thing.
Yep. Classic.
My dad used to call himself Johnny T-Bone. And I got it at the one and only incomparable Smith Street Tattoo Parlor on Smith Street here in Carroll Gardens.
Fabulous.
Not only is it near my house, but it actually is a world-renowned tattoo shop. And I got my tattoo from Steve, who is so awesome. He did
a lot of Steve's
one
in this
other
podcast.
This is a Steve podcast, a Plum Steve podcast. And when I was in there, I saw Mark, who owns Lucali. Thank you, Mark. If you're listening, for helping me, giving me the final seal of approval on this fabulous tat. This was very nice to run into you. And it was great.
Okay. Fabulous. See you next week.
Hasta la pasta.
Stay home.
Stay home.
So if you count that, I guess I lost 180 pounds.
180 pounds. So that is how many bowling balls? That's like 16, 15 bowling balls.
I have a 15-pound bowling ball, so gosh.
You kids do the math. Yeah, so 12, imagine holding 12.
12 to 14.
12 to 14 bowling balls. Go right, press pause right now. Go to your local bowling alley.
I've never thought of it in that kind of terms, but yeah, that's a lot.
All of our episodes are recorded right here at Studio 54 at the heart of Fort Greene, Brooklyn. Our rock star, award-winning sound editor and producer is Christine Farrell. I'm Zara Tangora.
And I'm Bretton Scott. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.